All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful, little cool Saturday, October 10th, 2015. It's setting up for a beautiful weekend, so we're excited for that. Hopefully you're heading out either to the golf course or at least getting ready to go to the golf course. Looking forward to talking to Ken Lockridge, the Glenhead Country Club superintendent today, but we're going to take a short break, and we'll get right back to it with Ken Lockridge. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabiel has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by Glenhead Country Club Superintendent Ken Lockridge. How you doing, Ken?
Great, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Should I say good morning or probably closer to good afternoon for you? I mean, given your
schedule. Still good morning. It's a chilly morning. Like you said, it's 49 degrees here in Glenhead.
Oh, wow.
A brisk morning.
Brisk morning, but it's going to heat up pretty good today, so it should be a pretty good day today.
Absolutely. There's a little wind out there, so it should make for some good fall conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I wanted to get started with you and how you got started in, you know, on the green side of golf. I think most people tend to trend towards the other side of golf, maybe being a professional or a player. I always find it interesting when people find an interest in the sort of behind-the-scenes part of golf. So, you know, what led you down that road?
Well, you know, my story is not, you know, unlike many others. I started out in the business as a caddy. At a young age of 12, working at Huntington Crescent Club, and didn't really know, you know, what I wanted to do back then. I was really, you know, obviously just looking for a summer job, looking for some income. And wasn't until I got to my senior year of high school I started to think about what I want to do in college, you know, what I want to major in, things like that. So, you know, I was approached by a family member who was in the actual business. He was head of Marriott Golf Operations. So I was very fortunate to have someone who could kind of talk me into going into the golf course management side of things.
Right.
So, you know, I'd been a player, played in high school golf, so I was familiar with the game of golf, and I always had a, you know, a green thumb, so to speak. I always wanted to go into landscape architecture, so that's sort of how I piqued my interest.
Right.
So I got a job at Huntington Crescent Club there, where I started as a caddy, and, you know, just sort of fell in love with it, I guess. You know, you have to love what you do when you put in the hours that we put in. So.
Absolutely. What was it about the job particularly? Anything that spoke to you?
You know, I think there's, you know, an immediate sort of gratification. I think when you can, you know, prepare a golf course, whether it's, you know, striping up the fairways or you know, raking bunkers or something like that, and you can step back and see immediate results.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, it's something that gets us all hooked a little bit.
Right.
You know, making members happy, making golfers happy. You know, producing those conditions that everyone loves.
Yeah, and you guys do such a great job about it. I always kind of feel like you guys don't get enough credit in general, and so it's always a pleasure when I have you have guys like yourself and Tom or Luke on the show because, you know, you guys just do a wonderful job, and I don't think it gets enough credit, to be honest with you.
Yeah, thanks for that. You know, it's certainly, like I said, you have to have a lot of passion for it, a lot of love for it.
Yeah,
you know, we all know we all put in long hours and work hard at producing a great product. You know, we're fortunate enough in the Met area to have great golf courses, great clubs. We got some of the best public golf courses in the world, as well as you know, the best private clubs.
Yep.
So,
how many different hats do you wear? Do you think, or for people who really are not familiar with the job that is the golf course superintendent, how many different hats do you think you wear?
Too many to count, you know. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, fun things, I think, on social media now with how many hats the superintendent wears.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, with politician and agronomist and babysitter and, you know, it's, there's a lot of jokes being made about it.
But, right.
Certainly many hats. You know, I think we get involved in so many facets of the club business, of golf. You know, we have to be golfers. We have to understand the game from the rules side of things. We have to be agronomists. We have to understand how to grow a crop, basically, for a playing surface.
Yep.
So, and then in with that, you know, it's tied into all the local rules and regulations that affect us. So you have to be a politician and a lawyer sometimes. So you have to deal with everything.
You know, a leader, you know, a leader of men or women, whoever happens to be on your staff. I mean, that's something that you have to consider. A business person. I mean, you have to provide, you know, setting up your budgets for it, which is sort of crazy that you're setting up budgets for, and maybe there's some consistency from year to year, but you're setting up a budget for basically something that you have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, you have a general sense, but we're talking about Mother Nature. So it's kind of it is a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's why from year to year, like you have those variances in your budget, but for the most part, you know, it's, you know, within a couple of percent of each other. So, you know, after you've done it for a few years, it becomes pretty, becomes easier and easier as you gain experience.
Right. So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You can never forecast what the next year is going to be like, but, you know, you can sort of plan for everything that might come up. Certainly in the golf calendar, you can plan for all your tournaments and what type of hours and scheduling you might have. But like you said, Mother Nature is always going to throw a little wrench into that socket.
Absolutely. Well, you know, speaking of forecasting, I mean, no one could have forecasted and no one saw that winter that we had the last year. So what is it that you're doing? You know, what is fall like for golf course superintendents across Long Island and across the Northeast look like, per se? And what can you do to sort of, now that you have your radar up on for this or sort of your guard up a little bit, what kind of safeguards could you employ?
Yeah, I mean, last year was certainly a brutal winter, and I think we saw widespread damage across the island, ice damage in the way of, greens that had some spots on them that either were killed or at least damaged and, you know, were slow to recover.
Right.
So I think the things that we've learned from last winter are, you know, that you really have to make sure that your plan is really healthy going into the winter. So that's maybe some extra aeration, certainly some added fertilizers, added nutrients. I guess studies have shown that, you know, potassium plays a really key role in enabling the plant to harden off for the winter. So to prepare itself for winter. So they've done some studies out of Rutgers, which have been really useful. I think a lot of guys are planning on making some potassium, some potash applications this fall. And also, you know, providing good drainage. You know, a lot of those ice damage areas were poor draining areas.
Right.
There were areas where water was just sitting and froze and refroze, and that's sort of what created the damage.
So the maybe the lower parts of the greens?
Right.
You know, where the greens run?
Greens might have a little bird bath in it where water might not be able to flow off of the green.
Right.
So as, you know, the ice melted and refroze, you know, it was just a cycle that just kind of kept on building up if you have a little birdbath area that wasn't able to flow off of the green. So I think, you know, adding an internal drainage, maybe improving some of those birdbaths so that water doesn't sit there, doing any type of aeration or drill and fill, which is a deep aeration, tine aeration to get sand channels down into the green so that you can really provide good drainage.
And when you say the ice damage, for those of us who are not sort of familiar, that was the part that the idea of the water freezing and then thawing and then freezing. If it had just frozen once, that's probably not as bad. But it's just this cycle of water ice that really is what was the killer, right, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, last winter was unique. It was really cold. We had a long period of time where we didn't see temperatures above freezing. But, you know, what I saw is that we had an ice buildup, and generally we try to monitor that ice buildup.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to that, you know, 45, 50-day mark, it's something certainly that we need to be concerned about.
Right.
And on Long Island, we usually don't ever hit that mark.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the plant is underneath that ice. It's basically suffocating in it, and it can't, you know, it can't come out into brutal winter conditions once it's exposed after being under that ice for that long. It's sort of a weakened plant. So
right.
just, just sort of ran a marathon. Now you're asking it to, you know, fight a 12-round fight. So,
right.
And that's sort of, I think, what happened. It was really more exposure issues that I saw here at Glenhead and talking with fellow colleagues. It seemed to be that once everything had melted, we sort of had a couple of days of a little warmer weather, and then we got socked with some really brutal winds and really cold temperatures again, and everything just sort of refroze with inside the plant, inside the soil, and I think that's when we saw, crown hydration and other freeze-type injuries.
Mm-hmm. And then that's it.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, a lot of times there's not a lot you can do to recover from that. We try to cultivate it, try to do some aeration and some seeding.
Right.
A lot of times we ended up just sodding out or using plugs to fill in the areas.
Right. How much, so you do that to sort of, you know, get your guard up for a winter. How important is the fall for you to sort of, and even into the winter, I guess you could say, to sort of get your maintenance together, your planning? I mean, everybody's got a plan, and I'm sure, including the golf course superintendent, for what they want to do for the winter. And, how important is the fall and winter to you?
Yeah, fall and winter are huge. I mean, personally, they're huge recharge moments, right? I mean, we come off a busy, long season. So a lot of times the fall is a great time to catch up, play a couple rounds of golf with your colleagues, get in some education. And like you said, it's you're laying down the foundation for the following season. So, coming into wintertime, there's not a lot of planning. I think mostly wintertime is the planning time. So going into winter, we're obviously rebuilding a lot of equipment and doing course projects, tree work, et cetera, that, bunker renovation or tee renovation you've always wanted to do, and really preparing for the next season. But there's certainly some downtime. I mean, we're all working probably a regular 40-hour week or close to it.
Right.
Which sounds crazy.
Exactly.
Working the 100-hour weeks in the season, you go down to a 40-hour week, and that's a light work week.
Right. Well, I was remiss to ask, we talked about the rough winter, but it wasn't an easy summer either. I mean, there was a lot of heat, was it much recovery from that, just from the summer itself?
Yeah, I think this summer, all in all, I think if you talk to most superintendents here in the Met area or on Long Island, I think, they'd say the summer was tough, but, it certainly wasn't the toughest.
Right.
We had, some pretty dry conditions. We were in a moderate drought. I think we broke some records for the amount of days we were sustained above, 80 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
It was something like 65 days we had there where the temperature, the high temperature for the day didn't go below 80. And that was basically due to a lack of rainfall, a lack of cloud cover.
Right.
So with that, that brought our average temperatures up. So we actually saw one of the hottest summers on record, not because of long extended heat waves, but because of high average temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So, for us,
just a lot of water then at that point, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of irrigating. So those of us who have good irrigation systems probably fared pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a good irrigation system, you probably saw the spots.
Right. You
probably struggle with that. So, but all in all, I think, most guys think they'd rather probably have a little bit drier summer than a summer which is too wet and too hot.
Right.
That leads to a lot of disease. And, you can't really control the moisture with irrigation, but you can't control Mother Nature dumps an inch of rain on you. And then you have to worry about it being too wet and try to dry it out.
Right, exactly. We're gonna take a short break. We'll be back in 1 minute more with Ken Lockridge. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
It's here at last. Golf season. South Shore Golf specializes in golf club repair, re-gripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf, 631-563-2025, 631-563-2025, or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
And we're back. On Par with Anthony Scorsia, speaking with Glenhead Country Club Superintendent Ken Lockridge. Ken, something you said before I wanted to touch upon, and that is you said playing golf with a little bit of, you know, some of your colleagues, and I had the opportunity to do just that at Sands Point. And the one thing I noticed is that it's a pretty good and tight-knit fraternity you guys have. I mean, everybody was so, you know, really nice. Everybody I spoke to was really just really cool and just fun to talk to. And it seems like you guys help each other a lot.
Yeah, certainly. I think it's, you know, one of the best things about our industry is that, you know, we do have a tight-knit fraternity. I mean, I think we all look at each other as colleagues and friends, and we do try to help each other out answering questions. You know, we're all sort of very open to discussing our businesses and our practices with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that makes the golf course industry really unique, is that, you know, we are like that. I think a lot of industries wouldn't talk to a competitor.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right down the street. They wouldn't talk to a competitor right down the road. So it's, you know, it's a great thing. I think the Long Island Golf Course Superintendent Association does a great job of having events and providing that platform for guys to network and become, you know, friends, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, you guys aren't competitors. You guys are where the rubber meets the road, and you guys, you know, you're all in it together, so to speak.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, when we get those golf events, we're certainly competitors, as you know. We're fierce competitors.
Yes, I see that. I did hear the word sandbag a few times. I'm not sure, but
certainly, there's a few among us. There's a few among us.
No, but it's a wonderful event, and I guess it must be, especially after a long, hot summer, you know, it's probably good for you guys to come and decompress a little bit together and have an adult beverage and just sort of, like I said, you know, just debrief, you know, the whole summer and just relax.
Right, right. And, you know, it's a great way to get out and see someone else's course.
Yeah.
You know, I think every course that I play that's not my own, I learn something from.
Right.
I see a way someone else is doing something different, or I see a way the operation runs differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you can see the issues that they face, and you know, afterwards, a lot of times you end up discussing with that superintendent, you know, what have you been doing to alleviate those problems?
Yeah.
So a lot of times it leads to some good discussion, and certainly you know, it leads to you know, learning a lot about the way different people operate their properties.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably at some point, you know, when you go to another person's golf course, at some point, you know, you're enjoying the day, but it's almost like you're still working a little bit in the back of your mind as you, you know, as you peruse the landscape. You know, not that you're not relaxed, but it's hard to turn off that superintendent's, you know, light, you know, when you're going across somebody's golf course.
Right. Yeah, you really can't turn it off. I think maybe where we turn it off is maybe if we go down south for the wintertime and play a round or two,
right.
You know, down south, you can almost turn off because it's almost so different that, you know, warm season grasses, Bermuda grasses and zoysia grass, things like that are so much different than the cool season grasses we deal with up north. I feel like, you know, for me, that's the places where I can turn it off, really, and
right.
Focus on the golf course, you know, or how I'm playing, or, you know, sometimes even just the golf architecture. I mean, that's, I think, a second love for a lot of us in the industry is, you know, golf course architecture and seeing some of the older courses, how they're designed by the great golf course architects.
Right. How much can players learn if they paid a little more attention to how you set up a golf course and tied in that with, you know, good golf course architecture, you know, which we have a lot of on Long Island. I feel like people just go and play and they're not really paying attention to anything. They're just playing the golf course.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit tough if you didn't have any advanced knowledge of the course being set, but certainly, you know, when it comes to tournament setup,
right?
You know, I think paying attention to you know, how the course is set up is only going to benefit the player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you know, it depends on every level of tournament. There's going to be a different setup based on the level of play, how many players have to get through the field for the day.
Right.
You know, we always have pace of play in mind with some of our tournaments. And certainly the caliber of player.
Right.
So certainly we're not going to set up an amateur event for seniors the same way we would set up a professional event.
Right.
You know, as far as course length goes, and you know, maybe those difficult hole locations on the greens.
So
yeah, I think it's always good to keep in mind, you know, what what type of event it is. You know, I think some guys come out on some of those amateur events and they think that, you know, they're going to play, you know, a really tough course and it might be easier than they expect, or vice versa. I think some of the pros think that the course is going to be set up really easy and it ends up being a lot tougher than they expected.
Right. But you bring up a good point. I mean, when you have a big field right away, it should, you know, it should tip you off that you may be able to be a little more aggressive because you're not going to have really tough pin locations, you know, and it may be even green speeds for whatever that might be for that day, and just expect it to get harder and harder as the week goes on. But at least you know in the beginning you're going to have a chance to be a little more aggressive.
Right, right, exactly. You know, I like in course setup, I like to really provide a variety of shots.
Right.
So, for instance, I'm not gonna set every hole location back left on the green.
Right.
Generally, you know, rule of thumb, we go 6, 6, and 6. So this is gonna be 6 middle, 6 front. 6 back, there might be 6 left, 6 center, 6 right.
Uh-huh.
It's not always the case with golf courses.
Right.
Sometimes you have golf courses that they don't have a lot of middle hole locations. Glenhead is one of those. We have some undulations, and in the middle of the greens tend to be where those undulations are.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to have much more accessible back locations and front locations. But again, trying to provide a variety of shots, left to right, right to left, you know, spots that make the golfers think about a short par 3 where they might have a lot of spin. You know, a front hole location might be easier than a back one.
Right.
They don't have the area behind the pin to land the ball and spin it back.
Right, right. Well, since you brought it up, Glenhead and its green complex, what kind of club is Glenhead Country Club? What kind of, you know, how would you describe the golf course in terms of its architecture and its style? You know, give us a little insight there.
Well, you know, we're certainly up here in Glenhead, up by Glen Cove on Long Island here. So
it's definitely not flat.
Definitely not flat. We have some great rolling hills.
Yeah.
It was originally Women's National,
mm-hmm.
which was a great design from what I hear. I think no one really can tell you exactly how it was. But
right.
Basically Marion Holland set out to build a club. The rumor was that, you know, she was breaking off from the creek. Because there was no women's golf or something like that there, and she got 3 golf course architects to collaborate on a masterpiece, and that was Devereaux Emmett, C.B. McDonald, and Seth Rayner. So those guys, you know.
So she got a couple of nobodies who didn't really know much about anything,
right. and just
figured, hey,
a little pitch and putt for her.
Exactly, that's amazing.
You know, that club has since changed. You know, that went under, and then it was reformed as Glenhead Country Club in the 47. So the routing is, from my understanding, is pretty similar. I think a lot of the complexes are similar, but it certainly has changed.
Mm-hmm.
We recently went through a renovation with John Harvey. Morris Golf came in and redid bunkers and some tees and really set out a master plan for the club. And that's, you know, bringing about a lot of change here. We're incorporating a lot more fescue, removing a lot of trees. So it's becoming less of a parkland,
right.
A little bit more link style or hybrid style. As I'd like to say that we're heading towards.
The master plan, was it towards a this evolution, if you will? Is it more of a throwback? Is it trying to restore? You know, there's so many renovations going on, and now you know people are talking about either original intent or to bring it up to date or to, you know, whatever the case may be. How would you describe then the master plan in terms of for Glenhead?
You know, I think it's a little bit of all of those. I think, you know, trees were planted back when for protection or for integrity for the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now everything becomes a little bit overgrown. And I think people have opened up to removing trees and realizing that, you know, if you open up the vistas and the views and leave maybe just the specimen trees, that might still keep the integrity of the hole,
mm-hmm.
Having a tree on the inside of a dog leg right or something like that. So I think it is bringing it up to date. I think it's modernizing it. I think, you know, it's a little bit of keeping up with the Joneses.
Right.
You know, everyone else is sort of doing it, so why aren't we?
Right, sure.
But it is certainly adding length, without a doubt. We're adding length to the course. I think, you know, mostly just trying to make, you know, the property as beautiful as possible, really.
Sure, sure. No, it's, and that's a beautiful part of Long Island. So it makes sense to open up the views and appreciate the landscape, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we have some great rolling hills, and, you know, we're still in the process. We're still Year by year, we go and we try to remove some trees that we think make sense. We certainly don't want to just go and clear cut every tree on the golf course.
Right, right.
That wouldn't be Glenhead. And we certainly have areas on the golf course where we can't remove trees, whether it's because they're along property lines, we have neighbors and things like that. And certainly we have some great specimen trees that the membership would be disappointed to see be removed.
The one thing I've learned in my short introduction to the green side of golf is I couldn't believe that how controversial the tree is in when it comes to golf courses and membership. And it's just amazing to me that, you know, people are really attached to their trees, and at one point, so were golf course architects, and they just planted them by the dozens. I know one architect who came to Long Island and did the renovation and paid for the removal of the trees. He felt bad that because he was the one who put them all down in the first place. But now you're really starting to see an acceptance to this, to weeding out or to really reducing the number of trees on a golf course.
Right, I think a large part of that has been, you know, turf health.
Right.
I think with trees come shade. And
right.
Shade and grass don't really mix.
Right, right.
So I think people have really realized that, especially around your green complexes, that, you know, shade can really be detriment to a green. And
right. Yeah, definitely.
I certainly think people are a little bit more acceptance of that because they see the conditions improve.
Sure.
And, you know, then from there they kind of get the bug and say, oh, wow, if we can have this way, then let's go ahead and do more.
Yeah, right, exactly. I have to take one more break, and when we're back, and we'll wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, joined by Glenhead Country Club Superintendent Ken Lockridge. Ken, let's just, we only have about a minute left or two. Just wanted to have a little fun in terms of if you could play one golf course other than Glenhead on Long Island, give me the golf course you would want to go to and who would be the three other people you'd play with.
Well, without a doubt, it's my most favorite golf course in the world, and that's National Golf Links of America. I had the fortune of working out there for 2 years back in the late 90s, and you know, that course is, you know, it's America's first Dream 18.
Yeah.
You know, the way it was designed as to take all the best holes from Scotland.
Yep.
And put them together. So that would definitely be the course I would play. And I usually play pretty well there because I got wide fairways and big greens.
Exactly.
And who would I play? So could it be anyone?
Anyone.
I play with?
I don't care who you choose. You could be, you know.
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive, friend, famous, whatever. Player, not player.
You know, I think it would be really neat to take a step back and maybe play with C.B. McDonald.
Right.
I heard some pretty interesting stories about him and how eccentric he was.
Right.
So I think it'd be neat to play with an old-time golf course architect like that.
Sure.
You know, I think I'd have to say old Tom Morris was the first superintendent, St. Andrews, sort of the godfather of golf. again, just to see if we were going to be in current time, what his thoughts are on the game, where we are now, where the game has taken us, where conditions have taken us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love to play with Payne Stewart, too. I think Payne Stewart was
was
a golfer that, you know, certainly left us way too early in life and was a favorite of mine as a childhood. So
that's a tremendous foursome.
Yeah.
You're the only disappointing part of that foursome. I'm just realizing that.
Certainly.
All right, that's we're just about out of time, but I really want to thank you so much for joining the program. You know, I appreciate everything that you guys do, your service to the game, and but I really appreciate you coming on the show to really let me get a peek behind the curtain of what you guys do and how you do it. I think it's great. You know, I love it. I think it's great for our listeners, and it's just a lot of fun to do. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, certainly my pleasure. Anytime.
All right, thank you very much, Ken. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
All right, that was Glen Head Country Club Superintendent Ken Lockridge. Really appreciate his time. That's it for us today. Really appreciate your time for listening and tuning in. Have a great weekend, folks.